Good day, everyone, at Golf WRX and Wisdom in Golf.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
We got Reese is on Sav's lap.
He loves to join us for these podcasts.
No kidding, eh? It's like we're all down here getting ready to go, and up pops the door, and in comes Reese, and he's got
a little pitter
patter. That's it. He's got to join us. So today we got an awesome show. We had a terrific session for this week's video.
Yeah,
and it's something that it came to fruition this week while we were watching the event in Hawaii.
Yeah, sorry.
And lo and behold, another tournament where Sang J.M. is just front and center and performing so well. Mm-hmm. And he performed really well last week.
Yeah.
And and we look at, and this is something that I used to teach. It was part of my portfolio when I first started in Toronto. Like, this is over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'd noticed that I would have a student do a takeaway and stop, and we would make sure that the direction of the takeaway matched the shot that they wanted to hit, whether it was a fade or a draw.
Yeah.
And then they would complete the swing from there. And then I had a lot of success with that. And, you know, you kind of, you know, discover more things, and then you realize, okay, this is working out really well too. And, you know, you can't throw the whole buffet at each student. And you kind of move away from certain things sometimes.
Yeah.
And the stuff that you're moving away from is gold, you know? And this came back full circle watching Sang J.M. swing the club. And I noticed he would, you know, do a takeaway, kind of pause there, and then perform the rest of his swing. And I really like the way, you know, his thought process looks organized, right?
Yeah.
His house looks like it's in order compared to the chaos you watch some golfers. You can really see the hornet's nest, freshly shaken above their heads as they're getting ready to hit their shots, and their eyes are darting all over the place, and you could see that it's chaos in motion.
Yeah.
And that's not what you see when you look at Sang J.M.
Yeah.
And you know, while he's getting ready and he's doing his thing, you just know he's going to hit a good shot.
Yeah.
You know something's good, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And another player that we enjoy watching is JT.
Yeah.
Right? Justin Thomas. And he's got a takeaway waggle that's very reminiscent of Mike Weir's heyday.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, Mike Weir, I was director of instruction at his home course at Taboo back in 2002 to 2005, just before they shut the place down for almost a year to do these major renovations.
Yeah.
And I'm not the kind of person that's going to sit around and twiddle their thumbs while that's going on.
Yeah.
So that's when I ended up at the Richmond Hill Golf Club.
Okay.
And while he was up there, he and his coach, they would come up, and he basically used the resort for his family holidays, and we were able to follow him around the golf course a couple of times and
train with him and stuff.
He was really firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
That's the year in 03 he won Hogan's Alley. He won at Riviera Country Club. I mean, you got to have your house in order if you're going to win at Riviera. That is
a tough course.
It's a tough golf course. It's a shot maker's golf course. You got to be able to fade and draw the ball.
Yeah.
And then he wins the Masters.
Yeah.
And then in 04, he almost wins the Canadian Open. I think that was the breaking point.
Yeah.
We'll save that story for another time.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, while he was building his game, he realized, I was there in Mont Tremblant when he was part of the Skins game, where he came up with David Duval, John Daly, Fred Couples, and himself.
Yeah.
And we were following him around the golf course. And at the time, you know, we, our staff would be, because there's a few holes where there was a lot of distance between the holes.
Yeah.
And we'd have a taxi cart that we'd taxi the players up to the next tee.
Yeah.
And there was, I remember the story right now when John Daly was smoking like a chimney.
Yeah.
And at one point, there was a really steep hill. We had to drive the cart up, and everybody was in the cart.
Yeah.
And the cart wasn't able to get up the hill.
Oh, really? No.
The motor wouldn't.
So here's John Daly hops off the cart with a cigarette in his mouth, and he starts helping the cart, pushing up the cart. Yeah. So I got this for you guys. Right? And he's pushing the cart up the hill. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, I bet.
And it was just the most amazing day that we had there. I mean, just to give an example, one of the kids, like John Daly, went to the clubhouse before coming out. And in the pro shop, we didn't have a lot of clubs there. They didn't sell a lot of clubs at the time. And this is the days where John Daly was with Callaway.
Yeah.
And there was a kid in the pro shop when John Daly was in there. And said, "John Daly, I'm such a big fan. It's my birthday today. Could I have your autograph?" Mm-hmm. And John Daly looks around, sees a set. There was one set of Callaway Big Bertha irons. He grabs them off the shelf, puts them on the counter, and says, "Happy birthday, kid."
Aww.
That's sick.
Isn't that sick?
Yeah.
Probably made that kid's life.
Yeah.
Could you imagine how much that set of golf clubs is worth today for that kid?
Yeah, he will never forget of that day, for sure.
Unbelievable. I mean, it just... The these are legendary stories. I mean, the guy is such a generous individual.
Yeah, yeah.
And just a few holes, you know, out there on the golf course, and there's a little ice cream truck that's on there.
Yeah.
And he signals the ice cream cart over, and then he gets in there, opens up, and he says, "Wow, you got some ice cream in here."
Yeah.
And he takes out these cases of ice cream bars, shreds them open, and starts throwing them into the crowd and going, "Hey, who wants ice cream? just put it on my tab." And he emptied the ice cream cart and shared it with everybody.
Wow. That's
right.
That's like a rock star right there.
That's rock star big time.
Yeah.
That's how huge he was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Mike Weir was part of that day, and Mike Weir did amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could see that something was going to happen. And then it was pretty cool because then when I was at Taboo, I saw him again there. And I was able to give his dad a couple lessons.
Oh, really?
And I was watching him, you know, striping these three irons, about 235 carry on the range there.
Yeah.
And I said, "Man, this guy's going to do something pretty special this year."
Yeah.
And he did. That's when he won. You know, this was an 02. The following season, 03, was just like his breakout year.
Yeah.
Like he won 8 events within 2 years. You know, he was a very dominant player.
Yeah.
And including the Masters.
Is he playing this weekend?
He is. He's actually playing. I think he made the cut.
I saw his name.
Right?
Yeah, I saw Weir yesterday when I was
I saw his name too. Yeah. That was really cool.
Yeah.
So at the time, he had used that little waggle of his.
Yeah.
To help him with his takeaway, match his takeaway to the pictures that he wanted to hit. And he was so successful on the range that he took it on the golf course.
Yeah.
And he was really successful on the golf course with that.
Yeah.
And they said, "Well, you know, kind of looks a little funny." And there was another player at the time that was doing really well with that. He was on the Golf Channel. And again, me and names, right?
Yeah.
Italian. This Italian fellow. Come on. Anyways, it'll come back to me. And so he tried to get rid of that waggle, and he couldn't do it. He had, you know, it was so nicely built into his swing routine.
Yeah, his kinetic chain. That.
Yeah. That. And then you look at JT, it's exactly what JT's doing.
Yeah.
That's what Mike Weir did. And it's very, very effective.
Yeah.
And so what we did an amazing video. All three of us.
Yeah.
I feel like I can do either one, but boy, oh boy, the two of you like gravitated completely towards something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sav is on the JT side.
Yep.
And you're on the SangJM side.
Yeah.
And you guys, when you see the video, it is, you know, stark. in comparison. It really is.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
It really is crazy. So Sav tried both, mm-hmm. and right away you said you preferred the JT version. Why was that?
Because for me, the Sungjae In version that we did was too choppy.
Right. It broke up the rhythm in your swing.
Yeah, I needed to feel more rhythm.
Yeah.
So having just like that little acid test and then resetting at the ball and then going with the full swing, it just mentally I was more organized that way.
Yeah, because one of the things that golfers have a hard time doing, they don't, they're not aware that their backswing doesn't match the direction that they want to send the ball on.
Yeah.
So let's look at that for a second. You have a flight plan that you're going to hit into. If you don't have a flight plan, and we don't talk about straight shots at Wisdom in Golf, and Jack Nicklaus said it 40 years ago. He says, stop trying to hit the darn ball straight. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, when there's zero side spin, I showed you on one of my swings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was so, you know, I go, look at this.
That's like one
zero side
blue
spin.
Moon.
That was the first time it happened since I've had the GC quad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I had zero side spin mm-hmm. on my shot.
And you've had it for a few years now.
We've had it for 3 years.
Yeah.
And you know, we hit a lot of shots on that darn thing, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so you have an angular momentum. The swing is revolving around. The center of your arm swing is your sternal notch, that little notch at the top of the rib cage between the two clavicles. If you only had one arm and you were swinging with just one arm around your shoulder doing windmills, like the windmill pitching in softball, the center of that circle would be your shoulder.
That's right.
But now you handcuff both hands together on the club, and the center of that now is what reunites your two shoulder sockets.
Yeah.
That's the ball socket system where the arms swing from. So you want the swing to be moving in a specific direction. There's some momentum to that.
Yeah.
And the way we illustrate that is, let's say you had a kid on a swing.
Yeah.
And you see the swing set is, let's say, lined up due south. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you pull the kid back northwest, and you let the kid go. Chaos. The chains of the swing are going to be, you know, flipping the kid around.
Yeah.
Kid's not going to be very happy.
No.
He's, you know, he's going to look back at you going, what the heck are you trying to do to me, right?
Yeah.
And it's just going to be a chaotic scene.
Yeah.
I mean, if the kid's young enough, he's going to start screaming. Mm-hmm. So not what you want.
No.
So you got to bring the kid back due north mm-hmm. and let the kid fall due south.
Yeah.
So now you've got harmony, right?
Yeah.
Everything's flowing beautifully. The kid can get into a beautiful rhythm and enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now Sav is a lefty, and you have we use an intermediate point to help us deliver into our picture, and we always have an intermediate point that is in our immediate peripheral vision.
Yeah.
And we choose that from behind. So we stand, let's say if our shot is facing due south, we back away from the ball due north mm-hmm. and we look straight down the line, and we pick a spot in front of the ball no more than 6 inches to a foot. And so that we can line up properly, number one. So what we're lining up is the flow of momentum in the swing.
Yeah.
And then, depending on if we're hitting a draw, we'd play the ball a hair back of center and feel like we're setting up, and when we get behind the ball, we're setting up in a way that the momentum wants to flow naturally, just left edge of the intermediate point.
Yeah.
So that, like a soccer player, if you're a left-footed soccer player and you want the soccer ball to curve from left to right, you would approach it from northwest mm-hmm. into southeast mm-hmm. and kick southeast with your momentum,
yep.
but you would be striking the ball with the inside of your foot.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That would give the ball a clockwise spin. So for a righty, it would be a fade, mm-hmm. and for a lefty, it would be a draw.
Yep.
Okay, so we got that clear. So now, in your backswing, Sav, you had a tendency to take it a little too far inside.
Yes.
And that happens to a lot of golfers when they say, oh, you know, I've been told time and time again that I'm over the top. My swing is going too much to the right for a left-handed player. And so I got to really pay attention and force my swing to swing out to the left.
Yeah. Well,
how much to the left? I don't know. As long as it's from inside to outside. And, well, that's basically jumping out of the frying pan and into the into the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we're looking for is what line exactly do you want to start the ball on? And then when you do your takeaway, so you would keep your eyes where the ball is, and you would allow the club to move away from the ball in a direction that matches just left edge of the intermediate point. And that's what you do, right, Sav?
Yeah.
And so you're showing your brain, confirming with your brain that this is what you want to do.
Yeah.
And you're getting your central nervous system, your premotor cortex ready to perform a task in that direction.
Yes.
And because of the way that you swing, Sav, and, you know, because you're braced on that forward side, and you're getting ready to throw the club through that arc in that direction. So in the backswing, you're basically flowing beautifully into that trail leg and really using that trail leg assertively to get you out of the way. And you find that when you perform a takeaway and stop there and then make your swing from there, it just breaks your swing up too much.
Yeah.
And I can see why that happens, because of the nature of your setup at address and how you're getting ready to go. Because I kind of had a chance to think about that afterwards and why that occurred.
Yeah.
So because the golf swing is a dual kinetic chain, if you had an axe in your hands and you were getting ready to cut the tree down, and you're heaving the axe into the backswing, you would never heave it behind you. Because then you can't attack the tree. You wouldn't heave it away from you, because then the axe would miss the tree and probably take out your front leg. You would basically take the axe back in a direction that you want to deliver the blow to the side of the tree with.
Yep.
And that's exactly what we're doing. We're just confirming that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I know why Moo does better with the Sang-Jae Im, because you're more neutral on your feet at address.
Yeah, he is.
He doesn't
have that forward press like I
do. Right. He's less braced into that forward side.
Yeah.
And we've had students say, well, why does Sav do that? And is that a good thing to do? And I'm going, listen.
A few people have commented on that.
Right. Yeah. And I have a tendency to brace against my forward side as well. And that's something I gravitated towards because I'm getting ready to deliver towards the target.
Yeah.
And Moo is not that way. And another player that you want to see on tour that is not that way either is Henrik Stenson. Mm. Henrik Stenson likes to preload on his back foot.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So think about it this way. If you look at our walking drill.
Yeah.
So we're cutting grass and walking at the same time. So if you're really good, if you haven't seen this video yet and this is your first time listening to our podcast, have a look at on YouTube. You go to Grass Whip Training, Sean Clement, and you'll see me walking and cutting grass as one of the exercises in that video. It's a nice, extensive video on training with a grass whip. And if you're walking and cutting grass, you'll realize, because we are bilateral machines, you know, to do a simple walk, you have to fall forward and you catch yourself with one of your legs.
Yeah.
Either one's good. And, you know, I tend to catch myself first with my right leg for some reason. So and then as you let the center of gravity keep falling forward, you continuously catch yourself. So as you do that, you're going up and down and you've got a nice flow, and this is how we walk. And you really don't have to think about how to walk.
Yeah.
This is what we're born to do. So, but if you're walking and cutting grass, you'll realize that your weight never goes outside your feet. It doesn't even go on top of your feet. It floats beautifully inside your feet as you're moving along. So let's say you're in your follow through. I'm going to talk for a righty this time. So you're in your follow through. The weight is on your left side. Mm-hmm. Now you want to cut grass, you know, moving in the other direction.
Yeah.
So the first thing that's going to happen is your right foot's going to plant to the ground. It's going to step a little forward and plant. Mm-hmm. The brain is using the pressure into the ground with the right leg through the right foot. Mm-hmm. And it's moving the body out of the way. So the first thing that occurs is pressurize the foot. That helps you clear the body, and that engages a kinetic chain, and the hands follow. Then the club head is basically lagging behind the hands,
yeah,
and it releases into the backswing. Mm-hmm. And now as the arms are floating up into the backswing, it unweights the left side. Now the left foot can step forward, and then the process begins again in the other direction.
Yeah.
So when you get really good at walking and cutting grass, you can start placing your attention where it needs to be.
Yeah.
So back to Mu. Mu does exactly like Sang Jin Im. So what we do with as a training session.
Yeah.
What Sav does is she confirms that the takeaway matches, comes back to the ball.
Yep.
And reorganizes her thoughts into, hey, I'm ready to throw the club that way, and I know that it's going to go that way in the backswing for me to throw that way in my follow-through. And now you're just simply locked into your feel, mm-hmm, of throwing the club in that direction.
Yep.
And then you become a witness to that now.
Yep.
You're just a witness to that transpiring in front of you. Yep. Whereas Mu, you're going to set up.
Yeah.
You see the blur.
Yeah.
You do your takeaway and you stop.
Yeah.
Completely. Mm-hmm. And this gives you a chance to organize your thoughts.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, number one, does that direction match up with the direction I want the ball to start on? Check. And then you say, okay, now that that fits, what's the rest of the swing going to be like?
Yeah.
And then you can actually picture the arm club unit swinging around your sternal notch into that direction,
yeah,
to finish the backswing.
Yeah.
And then you're focused on that snap release compression.
Yeah, that draw was nice.
That draw release and that draw compression.
That's right. Yeah.
Into that direction.
Yeah.
And it was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the rush was gone.
Yeah.
There's a lot, you know, I mean, you're only in your third year.
Yeah, and I still felt the rush, you know, after being on every ball. It's just this mental thing that I just needed to polish up, and this slowed it down a lot.
It really made a really cool, it's like a nice walk in the park.
Yeah, which we're not really used to coming from soccer and football.
Right.
Like even sometimes I find myself rushing and I'm like, whoa, let's just take a breath here for a second.
Yeah, exactly. You're a little frantic going on there, dear.
Like, once I start, it's like I can't stop.
But the adrenaline starts to kick in, right? So you're trying to...
Because, you know, soccer and football is like, go, go, go. Like, you're not stopping.
Yeah.
And so then when I'm training for golf, it kind of like subconsciously is just there.
And that happens to a lot of golfers.
It takes me a second to actually like realize that I'm doing it too.
Right.
And usually I'm a very self-aware person.
Yeah.
But when it comes to that, I don't know what it is, but after like 5 minutes, I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Let's just chill out.
I know. Huh? Yeah. And that's something that Ben Hogan had to do. Mm-hmm. Like when he was in his prime, he'd hit a couple of shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, the caddies were out on the range receiving the golf balls. I love this story. It's like, Ben, do you need some help with that slice, with that fade?
Yeah.
Says, do you see my caddy moving? Mm-hmm. Get out of here.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
So he hit a few shots towards his caddy and, you know, take a pause, took a nice drag and a cigarette, switch clubs, you know, and that's a page out of Sam Snead's book. Mm. Mm-hmm. Sam Snead could not watch Hogan hit balls or play on the golf course because his swing
was so relaxed,
was rapid fire.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Oh, yeah. So, just throw off his rhythm.
It, yeah, exactly. Sam Snead had a much more rhythmic golf swing, mm-hmm. whereas Hogan was he would actually use the momentum going into his backswing mm-hmm. to help him engage his kinetic chain more aggressively because, yeah. you know, he needed all the power he could muster. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me a lot about Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau uses a faster backswing to load up his kinetic chain.
Yeah, he's fast.
Right?
Yeah.
And so he could get every ounce of that power through the shot because he's looking for raw speed.
Yeah.
And hopefully that he'll, you know, he's going to have to
change it up.
Change it up.
Yeah, yeah, I think he is.
Because you can't perform when you're chaotic.
No.
And that was really key for you, this drill.
Yeah.
Because I could, you know, I could see immediately how it just calmed you down.
Yeah, it did.
And it gave you a chance to realize the swing through,
yeah.
you know, the swing, because there is a backswing.
Yeah.
And the backswing for a lot of golfers is very distracting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you just, all you want to do is confirm that the backswing is going to allow you to deliver your action
yeah.
in the direction that you want the ball to start.
Yeah.
So for Savannah, once the rhythm is flowing in the right direction, you're good.
Yep.
I mean, your spray pattern, Sav, is unbelievably more accurate when you do that waggle.
It's something that I definitely have to
yeah.
make permanent in my routine.
Yeah.
Because
it's that is now forever in your routine.
Yeah.
Especially on the golf course.
Yeah. When you watch Savannah now, whether you'll see her in our videos, or you'll see her on the golf course in her blog, or in her vlog, I should say, with Moo. You're going to see, this is now built in mm-hmm. and yeah. A wonderful realization that we had,
yeah.
in order to gel and make aware that things fit.
Yeah, it's like I'm giving myself the best chance possible.
Yeah.
For a good outcome.
And doesn't it calm you down?
Yeah.
To know now and say, yep, that fits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now it's
there's
like,
no
okay,
guessing.
There's no guessing anymore. There's no hoping.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like hope and fear. That's that's your worst enemy on the golf course.
Yeah. yeah.
I remember Mo just talking, hope and fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to know. You want to be able to predict.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's what we give our students, the ability to predict.
Yeah.
And this was a big piece.
Yeah, it was. It lowered my cortisol levels big time just by
thinking. Right?
Yeah, because, like, I'm not scared to hit the ball. I'm not scared to take the shot into the picture. It was, and also, like you said, it kept the spray pattern tighter as I kept hitting it. And, like, I was like, yeah, I can definitely stay on this line
yep.
for, like, 10 shots. You know, it's like that's the confidence it gave me.
And even if you're off by a little bit here and there, there's nothing yeah. to fix.
The consistency level was through the roof for both of you.
Yeah.
Like you'll watch Moo in the video, and we're looking for a specific direction. We're hitting that draw.
Yeah.
And you go ahead and execute. The ball starts exactly in the direction you wanted it to.
Yeah.
And then we look in the machine, and the machine says, "Ah, you were 2 degrees open on the face."
Yeah.
Well, 2 degrees open on the face is way better than 12.
Yeah,
that yeah. you used to have.
Yeah, that's right.
Right,
yeah.
The one that left and went to the second fairway over.
Yeah, that's right. Watching.
Whereas now you're just missing the green slightly to the left.
Yeah, like 10 yards.
Or so
yeah.
now we can actually chip and putt, make a bogey instead of making a quad.
Yeah.
that's right. right.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, and then we say, okay, that's only 2 degrees.
Yeah.
There's nothing to fix.
No, because yeah. The margins are so small.
Yes.
It's like you can't freak out over 2 degrees.
And this is one of the things that the GC Quad has really brought it home for me.
Mm. Yeah.
10 years ago, I was a free man on the golf course and as a teacher from a study that I'd read on, they took a PET scan. They wanted to see what parts of the brain were lighting up when you're doing a specific task. And many of you have heard this story. For those of you who haven't, it's quick. They did a 1-foot putt, a pro and an amateur. They never missed the putt. out of 100 putts, they look at the brain scans, not one brain scan repeated.
Yeah.
So you can't repeat
You're not a machine.
The task the same exact way.
Yeah.
So the task is always going to come off slightly different one from the next. So that means you can't ever make sure. Mm-hmm. So what's your best chance? Well, when I throw the club that way, I get a good weight shift because throwing something in a specific direction engages your kinetic chain. Mm-hmm. Kinetic chain, out of pure self-preservation, is going to get you the weight shift that you're looking for, mm-hmm. the clearance of the body that you're looking for. Why? Because you have a specific target. Yeah. The brain is going to open the body exactly the right amount for you to find that target.
Yeah.
And then it's going to release in that direction. Mm-hmm. So the machine was displaying exactly what you were trying to do, Mo.
Yeah, at focus. That's
you were throwing to the left edge. We look on the machine. The angle of approach. The approach
yeah.
was 7 degrees from the inside, mm-hmm. and it measures the ball taken off after that. And it was like 8 degrees, you know, leaving to the left.
Yeah.
And the club face was 1.8 degrees open. Mm-hmm. So he said, okay, you're three degrees angle of attack down, 7 from the inside, looking good. Mm-hmm. All right, hit another one. And he hits another one. And it's 6.5 from the inside, 2.8 down. And now the club face is 2 degrees closed.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, boom, the shot is coming right back onto the target. Gorgeous draw. And absolutely freaking lambasted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That last
one of the best shots you hit all day.
That's the last shot you hit and just came right back on to right over the flag stick,
yeah,
right behind the green, and yet it ended up like 2 feet left of the center line.
Yeah, which is really cool. That's what I was happy about. I was like, yeah.
Exactly.
I was happy about it because it just gave me confirmation, like, this is what will keep me with my shot every time.
Yes. So the consistency was right there.
Yeah.
The only thing left was club face.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people would go, oh, I missed to the left of the green. What am I doing wrong? Was it my elbow? Was yeah. it my weight shift? Maybe yeah. I didn't clear my hips enough.
Yeah.
Let's look at that on video. And then you get somebody to dissect your swing mm-hmm. and rip your guts out on video.
Yeah.
And you realize, well, you know, if I take my club back in my hands and reset up, my spikes will never go back to the same exact mark they were on. My fingers won't go exactly into the same dimples on that grip.
Yeah.
And my ball position may be a quarter of a degree more back in my stance or more forward in my stance.
Yeah.
It's because you can't ever repeat exactly the same thing.
We're not built for that.
You can repeat the task. I want to throw the club to the left of the intermediate point so my ball has a nice draw. Mm-hmm. And we set up and we confirm the takeaway matches the picture.
Yeah.
And then we throw into that direction mm-hmm. and we observe non-judgmentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like the last thing come on, Moo.
Yeah.
Couldn't you get that darn club face closed enough so that you wouldn't have to go chasing that ball to the left of the green? Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Right? And people are,
yeah.
you know, people punishing themselves.
Yeah, they're chasing perfection in a game that's not meant to be perfect.
Nope.
Like, it's never, ever going to be perfect. So if you just...
You know what's perfect about golf?
It's imperfect.
That's right. Yeah. It's imperfections.
Yeah. yeah. And that's what, like, keeps you engaged in the game, you know, like wanting to get better and stuff like that. But you can't drive yourself crazy if you're looking for those quote unquote perfect shots every time. Like that's exactly. just never, ever going to happen.
So another wonderful cog in our wheel mm-hmm. this week is integrating a waggle. Mm-hmm. We call it a takeaway waggle because yeah. it is a takeaway. Mm-hmm. So it can either be part of the swing.
Yeah.
Like Moo and Sang J.M. Or it could be part of your pre-swing routine, like Sav and JT. So we hope that this week, all of you can find your best takeaway waggle to make your swing not only more accurate, but to make your approach more organized.
Yes.
Yeah.
Put some order in that house. Mm-hmm. Get rid of that hornet's nest. And that was like, we just calmed one more hornet down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we have peace in the house.
Yep.
So with that, everyone have an awesome week. Thanks, you guys, for a wonderful video this week. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, that was a great one.
All the best.
All the best, guys.
Take care.